Good morning, I'm sorry, good afternoon and welcome. This is the hybrid commission workshop of May 24th, 2021 to discuss bicycle and pedestrian safety. During this hybrid commission meeting, the City Commission is physically present in a socially distanced manner at the Commission Chambers in Miami Beach City Hall, while city staff attend the workshop virtually. Public is encouraged to attend the workshop virtually. However, members of the public who wish to attend in person or provide public comment may appear at the Commission Chambers. While at City Hall, members of the public are required to wear facial coverings and observe social distancing consistent with CDC guidance to limit the spread of COVID-19. To participate or provide comment virtually during the commission meeting, the public may join the workshop by visiting the Zoom app on their smart device or on their web at zoom.us or by telephone, and I'm going to give you both numbers and repeat the second number, so get your pen out, 301-715-8592. Or 888-475-4499. That's 888-475-4499. The webinar ID is, and you need to write this down, 813-928-5767-1#. I'll repeat it. 813-928-5767-1#. Members of the public wanting to speak virtually on an item during the workshop must click the raise hand icon if using the Zoom app, or press *9 at to raise their hand. Okay, that I think explains everything. Most of you who've been participating have heard that before. But let's begin the meeting. But let me first ask our city attorney, Raphael, if you don't mind leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance, if we all could stand and face the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You've become pretty good at that. All right. Mr. Clerk, any announcements?
No, sir.
So we're not taking a vote, right? So this is just a workshop.
Correct?
Correct. Okay. So, Alina, are you leading us, or who you bringing up?
Mr. Mayor and Honorable Commission, it's wonderful to be here this afternoon and be able to spend some quality time with you discussing all that the city has been busy doing as it relates specifically to our bicycle pedestrian master plan. So we're hoping our transportation staff is going to provide you with an update regarding that master plan, as well as talk about all the different initiatives that are happening not only in our country but internationally. There's a lot of wonderful information that Commissioner Arriola has brought to our attention that we want to highlight and talk about, as well as talk about the pilots that we're currently implementing and options for the future. With that, I would ask Jose Gonzalez to introduce the agenda and to talk and start walking us through the presentation.
Thank you. Jose?
Thank you. Thank you, Alina. Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. For the record, Jose Gonzalez, Transportation and Mobility Director, and it's a pleasure to be here this afternoon and especially in person once again. First and foremost, I would like to thank the City Commission for generously hosting this workshop, and a special thank you to Commissioner Arriola for raising the issue of bicycle and pedestrian safety in our city, which was the impetus to this workshop. At this time, I'd like to introduce key staff and members of our consultant team who assisted with putting this workshop together. Josiel Ferrer Diaz, Assistant Director with the Transportation and Mobility Department, and our consultant team who is joining via Zoom, Tony Garcia with Street Plans Collaborative, and Alia Awad and Jennifer Baldwin with Alta Planning and Design. And we have a presentation, if communications could bring that up, please. Next slide, please. So we have several topics that we'll be discussing with you.
Pardon me, Jose, hey, I apologize. Mayor, may I say something? This is Ricky.
Sure.
Mayor?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I just came back in the middle of the day, but just the fact that we're having a commission workshop, in the middle of the day, with our very busy schedules and, a lot of pressing issues we have in the city, I think just shows overall our commitment to trying to get this right. Pedestrian and bike safety is part of a modern 21st century transportation plan. This city takes it very seriously. I know our staff does and all my colleagues do. And, you know, I just want the public to be aware that, you know, we are focused on this issue and we want to try to find the best path forward. And as the mayor always likes to say, you know, we create the checklist that other people check, you know, and we can be leaders as a city here in this country on pedestrian and bike transportation and, you know, really be one of the leading cities in the world on this issue if, you know, we put our minds to it and get behind a plan that will get us there. We've already taken some really great steps in connecting the beach walk, you know, all the way from the southern tip of Miami Beach to the northern tip. And, you know, God willing, in the next few years, we'll connect the bay walk. So all these things to me are just down payments on a promise I think we've made to residents that we take this seriously and we are going to get there sooner rather than later. And I look forward to this presentation.
Thank you, Commissioner Ariola. And thank you, by the way, for your leadership on a lot of these issues. I know all my colleagues share the same goal of creating a live-work-play area. We're a barrier island 7.5 miles long with limited arteries, but people, as I've watched our city change over the last, you know, 60 years, frankly, we went from a place where very few people were in cars, very few people even were on bikes, very few even were walking around everywhere, to a place that is open, that invites and embraces activity outside, that has more and more cars and needs to have more and more bike paths and more promenades for people to walk on. So this is incredibly important to our city more than most, and we appreciate all the work. And I just say to the public, we're trying a lot of different things out there. We're not thinking within the box. We are thinking outside of the box. And, you know, give us your feedback. That's important. But also understand we're trying to learn a little bit about how best to solve some of these challenges in our city. And we're not going to be perfect, but we're not going to quit. And don't make trying innovative new things a bad idea. Work with us to try to find the right solutions. So let's go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Can you bring the presentation back up?
Thank you.
So we're excited. We have several topics that we'll be discussing with you today. We'll begin with providing a high-level background on our bicycle pedestrian master plan and a status update on project development and implementation. We'll then provide some lessons learned and key takeaways from our research on international and national cities that are on the forefront of bicycle safety and mobility. We'll then focus on the Cambridge, Massachusetts Cycling Safety Ordinance and its applicability to Miami Beach. We'll share some ideas for potential short-term quick-build projects. And lastly, we'd like to discuss some current challenges and opportunities that lie ahead as we strive to advance bicycle pedestrian safety and mobility in our city. Next slide, please. So what brought us together today at this workshop was a discussion on bicycle pedestrian safety at the Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee meeting a couple months ago. At that meeting, the committee asked that we research what other leading cities in Europe and in the U.S. are doing in terms of bicycle safety and mobility, including policies, innovative approaches to implementation. The committee also asked that we look into the Cambridge Cycling Safety Ordinance and an appropriate approach for Miami Beach. Next slide, please. Our goal for this workshop is to obtain your input and recommendations on a few key items: our current approach to implementing master plan projects, and discussing if a shift in the approach is desirable to accelerate project delivery. Secondly, whether or not to pursue an ordinance similar to the Cambridge Cycling Safety Ordinance and how it can potentially work for Miami Beach. And thirdly, we want to discuss and get your feedback on the current resources allocated to the department for master plan project implementation and ways of expediting project delivery. Next slide, please. The city's most recent community survey shows that while some residents are willing to bike and walk more regularly, they are most concerned about their safety while using the existing bicycle and pedestrian facilities in our city. Next slide, please. And at this time, I'd like to introduce Tony Garcia with Street Plans Collaborative, who the city engaged in 2015 to create and author the city's Bicycle Pedestrian Master Plan and Street Design Guidelines. Street Plans Collaborative is spearheading numerous innovative bicycle pedestrian projects and initiatives throughout the country, and Tony is on the forefront of those initiatives. Tony will be providing a high-level background on our master plan and street design guidelines. Tony?
Thank you, Jose. Mr. Mayor, commissioners, it's so wonderful to be here. You know, as Jose said, I travel around the country. I do this work everywhere. And it's such a pleasure to be able to do this in my own backyard. Miami Beach is where my wife and I lived when our son was born. We lived on in North Beach on North Bay Road. And I have a long history there in the city. Our office started there. So it's nice to come back home and be able to share the work that we did. For many of you, this is going to be an introduction to our master plan. I'm sure you've already heard it, but you haven't heard me talk about it. But also, just to be able to recap all the great things that staff has done and see where we can go. So if we can go to the next slide, please. So just in terms of setting the stage here and you know, when we approached this concept of the master plan and what was happening at that time, the city had two efforts going on, well, really three. It was the transportation master plan that focused on global issues related to roads, transit and bicycle and pedestrian issues. And our work actually started as an update to the city's original bicycle plan, which was called the Atlantic Greenways Network Plan, the AGN. And that quickly morphed into two parallel efforts that we took on. One was this idea of a bicycle pedestrian master plan that I'll go into in a moment. And the other one was a really innovative document, especially for Miami-Dade County, which was a street design guideline. You know, acknowledging that we can't design every single street, though we really tried. We tried to give you a blueprint for all the other streets that you might implement and other approaches that were not project specific, but that gave you some sort of guidelines. And the goal was really to increase the number of people walking and biking and to make it easy and safe for people to walk and bike. And part of the ethos behind these documents is that the majority of people are interested in riding. We all have an experience as children or teenagers. We ride bikes, we go to college, we come back. And for most people, that was the last time they ever rode a bike. And part of the problem is the infrastructure doesn't match the need. And so what research has shown, bicycle research has shown that the majority of people want to ride, but they want to ride in physically separated facilities. They do not feel comfortable riding in the middle of the street on sharrows. They'll ride on trails, but they want to ride on physically separate facilities. And the meta conversation, and this came up in a lot of our conversations on the field tours, was really shifting the ratio of people space to car space. And overall, in this conversation we're going to have today, the more space you give to cars, the more car use you have. And the more space you give over to pedestrians and to bicyclists, the more bike, ped, and transit usage you will have. And that's going to be one of those main metrics and beyond today that you can return to as a way of judging, you know, whether you're doing something that's pushing the needle in terms of your mode shift. And actually, that'll take us to our next slide. Why is this conversation important? And these numbers are really as of 2012. And they took into account your tourist visitors and commuters as well. You have 30% of your residents, of people. This is not trips. These are the people that live and work and visit Miami Beach are on foot or on bike or taking transit every single day. And south of Dade Boulevard, that number jumps to 50%. That's a huge number. That's more than in anywhere else in the state of Florida. And I think that merits a different way of thinking. We can't have standards that apply to West Kendall apply to Miami Beach. And that's often what happens, that sort of philosophy about roads. We have to get away from this idea that that we plan for cars, especially in those locations where at least half of your population is already on foot or on bike. You go to the next slide. And one of the more innovative creative things, I think, that came out of the master plan effort and the transportation master plan effort was this idea of setting a target. It's so easy to have a master plan that just shows a bunch of pretty pictures. And I know Jose is always, he's always told me, you know, we love the pretty pictures, but we need something, you know, concrete. And one of those ways that we got to a concrete outcome is by saying, okay, well, why don't we tie these projects to specific mode share goals? Let's not just do ad hoc planning, so many cities do. Let's try to tie these projects to an actual shift in our transportation network. And so what this looked at was, and this was one of the first, you were one of the first cities that actually set these targets in the United States, and certainly in the southern United States. It envisions, the resolution envisions a 20% shift from cars to other modes in 15 years, which I think is totally doable. And actually, you could surpass that with the right types of investments, I think. And those targets were really based on your land use, the intersection density, your existing transportation network, and what other cities were doing. And I think it's important to point out here, as we talk about individual projects don't move the needle. You're not going to create a bike lane and then see a whole shift. Although you might have seen, for example, Washington create a huge boom in bicycle use. It's the network effect that we're really looking for when it comes to this mode shift. And ultimately, as I said this before, we're looking to shift the ratio of public space. You look at your streets are public spaces. So what percentage of your public spaces are given to pedestrians and bicycles versus to cars? And the more you shift that ratio overall, the more you're going to shift the overall percentage of mode shift. You can go to the next slide. Okay, so now I'll dive into the two documents that are the focus of my part here. The bicycle master plan. When we approach our master plans, and we do this type of work all around the country, the real focus of our work is to try to give staff and city leaders a document that they can implement. There's nothing that I hate more than a master plan that has no legs, that is not implementable. And so we looked at three types of projects. The first was, how do we close the gaps in your existing bike network? And when we started this work, it was there were a lot of sharrows. There was the beach walk that had some spots that were still missing. And you had a decent growing bikeway network. So our first task was, how do we start to connect some of these dots as soon as possible? And then the next tier of projects was, what are those projects that we can start to retrofit the street? And Josiel's going to go into the whole conversation about trade-offs. And that's what those projects were. They were, okay, how do we create protected bicycle facilities on these streets without changing the curb dimension? That is, we're not changing curbs and gutters, but we know we have some parking here that we might be able to take away, or the lanes are very wide, or there's an extra turn lane that we don't need. And how do we use that space for bicyclists and pedestrians? And then the long term, what Kathy Brooks called the aspirational category, that's what happens in the long term. You make major investments in raising the streets and in widening your sidewalks, and you create grade separated bicycle facilities. And so that's a complete redo of the curb to curb dimension. And what we're showing here are some street sections. We really did drawings for a good percentage of the street network in Miami Beach. When I look back at the collection of drawings, and they each have the short term, those tactical projects, and then the long term. Because that's the idea. You want to start with something right now, see how it works, and then build out something more elegant over the long term. And these projects were all tied to specific goals, your mode share goals. And you can go to the next slide. Now, in parallel with the bicycle master plan, as I said, we realized we couldn't draw every single detail. So we gave you a document that was, for its time, and even now, it's something that we refer back to, a very progressive and innovative document, because it gave you a toolkit for how to increase the amount of people space for people walking and biking and taking transit. And that was what we're showing here are just intersection treatments, different ways of doing intersection treatments, protected bike lanes. And this is really intended to be used by all Miami Beach departments. So it was intended to, and I hope that it's used this way, a way to bridge the gap. You know, too often in city government, we see departments working in silos and not referring back to the work that the other departments are doing. This document should bridge all those gaps so that when there is a stormwater project, they're looking at this to see how the bike facilities should fit in. And it was really about creating that framework for the city that said, look, we're going to start to move the needle on our mode and create this complete streets framework. And one of the other things it did was also recommend pedestrian priority zones and also bicycle priority zones. And those bike priority zones, as it turns out, were implemented by staff as part of your Slow Streets program. So there were so many pieces of this document. Your bike boxes, that was something that was detailed in the guidelines, and now Miami Beach was the first in Dade County to create a bike box. First in Dade County, and I'm not going to steal any of Joe Ziel's thunder. Now, I know one of the questions that was brought up in anticipation of this workshop was, how can our streets help facilitate security? How can we make sure that our streets are safe for people who are walking and biking? And I think there is no silver bullet when it comes to street design and a relationship with street safety. But I can tell you that as successful as your streets are as public spaces, that's how safe they will be. The more successful the street is, the more people will be there, the more merchants will be successful, the more eyes on the street there will be. And that's a famous Jane Jacobs quote where she talks about the way that buildings should face the street. And there should be eyes on the street, and that natural surveillance of the street. If you create beautiful streets, there's going to be natural surveillance. And you see that in pockets around the beach, and where there are nefarious activities that are happening, it's because the street is lacking, and because the storefronts are lacking, and because the urbanism is dead in those areas. And I think that there is a way for this work to be able to impact that conversation in a positive way. Go to the next slide. And I think I'm handing it off here to Josiel.
Good afternoon, Josiel Ferrer, Assistant Director for Transportation Department. So in the next couple of slides, we're going to give you essentially the where are we now on the master plan. So if we can go to the next slide. So real quickly, I'm going to pause in the master plan implementation process. And project development is divided into phases, essentially, that cover all the way from planning all the way into the construction of it. Some projects can move directly into design, while some other projects, given their complexity, we may need to do traffic studies and planning studies. Next slide. So currently, we have in our master plan, we have 46 projects, bike ped projects in the priority one, which is supposed to be covered under the first 5 years. At the beginning of 2020, I would tell you that most of our projects were in the planning stage. While in 2020, we were able to advance a lot of projects, a lot of permanent projects, even to the design and even completed stage. So we were able to make a lot of headway in that. And that brought us to our current status, which is we're at 89% of our projects in priority one are in project development. So therefore, we have been moving forward rather quick as much as possible with the master plan. Next slide. As far as the BPMP funding, the Bicycle Pedestrian Master Plan project funding, so 48% of our projects today are either not funded or partially funded. It is worth noting that prior to the GEO bond and some grants that we've been successful in obtaining, we had more than 60% of the projects either partially funded or not funded. The projects that are partially funded essentially assume, and that's the way that they were funded, they assume that they would be implemented in conjunction with neighborhood improvement and resilience projects. So that's why, only a portion of that funding was allocated. And as of today, we don't have funding allocated for short-term and interim projects in many cases, so that's an important piece for discussion. Next slide. So just to pause for a second on the partially funded projects, we have 14 miles of partially funded projects. And as mentioned previously, these projects depend on neighborhood improvement, you know, projects in order to be done. And they cannot be implemented with their current funding as standalone projects. Some of these projects today are, you know, are critical gaps in our network. So they would need to, you know, these are projects that we would need to concentrate on in order to complete our network. Next slide. So I think we have to pause on highlighting what we have been able and what we have been, you know, successful at. So in 2015, you know, we were the first city in the Southeast United States to shift our modal hierarchy to be a pedestrian first modal hierarchy. And then in 2015 and 16, we got to work right away, and we, you know, we created our network of green painted bicycle lanes, the, you know, painting all the existing bike lanes green. In 2018, we were recognized by the Miami Herald, and we implemented our first protected bike lane up in the northern section of West Avenue. And in 2020, we did our first repurposing of an actual travel lane with the Meridian Avenue project. We took it from four lanes down to three lanes and implemented protected bike lanes there. And we very recently completed our first bicycle box. We've also been, you know, doing some interim projects that we have been able to do over our time in 2020. So if we can go to the next slide, please. Nevertheless, I mean, we do have some key gaps in our network. And, you know, some of these key gaps are integral to sort of completing our network. And, you know, we have 27 islands, essentially. If you look at our city and count our islands, we're 27 islands connected by bridges. And this creates some natural pinch points. So addressing these gaps is rather critical. And some of these gaps, we have some mentioned here. You know, Pine Tree and Lagores, 63rd Street and Dade Boulevard. And, you know, they vary in their length, but they're really critical in order to complete our network. And, you know, without some sort of implementation in these corridors, we can never say that we have a complete network. Next slide.
Hey, let me ask you a question, because I know there have been some discussions. Could you go back to the 63rd Street about taking a bike lane on 63rd Street? Are we going to talk about that later, or is now a good a time to ask you about it?
Now is as good a time as any. What's that?
Is this new?
When I lost the top, I added the bottom.
Listen, it's like, you know, respect. So, you know, one of the things I always have wondered about as our city, if it were just 92,000 people stagnant, we would not, a lot of these challenges would be easier because we don't get 200, most cities don't get 200,000 people on an evening. But we do with great regularity and sometimes more than that. So one of the questions I have is, as you put together bike lanes and things like that, for instance, the 62nd Street, I know that's something you all are considering. I live in that area, so I know it gets backed up all the way down Pine Tree Drive, sometimes, you know, half a mile or more, and Alton Road all the way around the curve and things like that. So I guess my question is, how do you weigh the impact of when you make it more pedestrian or more bike friendly? I mean, there are always going to be cars, and of course, the problem we have is that even if our residents got accustomed to trying not to getting out of their cars more, we end up with 100,000 visitors that use the same streets and aren't going to really care about what happens on Monday because they're going back to wherever they're from. So, how do you navigate those? The congestion that comes when you eliminate a lane to, even if it's a good idea and a good goal, when you know you're still going to have, I mean, how do you deal with the traffic and backup on an intersection like 63rd Street?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's a combination of an art and a science. It requires a lot of data collection because every repurposing of a lane, in other words, taking a lane away from a car or from parking to give it to another mode requires some careful thought. 63rd is definitely a critical, it's critical for cars, it's a critical link in our bicycle network because we have very limited opportunities to travel east and west. So it needs to be looked at from two aspects, from the aspects of how is the street being used today, and the traffic study will determine what the volumes are, what the congestion levels are, and what it would be if we were to take a lane away from cars to give it to bicycles, but it would also look at what the how it would function with a bike lane on it and with that complete connection from south to north and east and west along 63rd. The issue is that if we don't move forward with these critical links, then we'll never achieve that goal of having people not use their vehicles and use a bike. If that east-west connection is not there, if it's not there on 41st, because it's not there today on 41st, if it's not there on 63rd, it's 71st has an east-west connection, but it's not a very safe one. It's not a protected bike lane, so there are very limited opportunities to travel east and west. So in order to achieve the mode share goals that we've set out for ourselves, it is important to somehow, some way, close those gaps. And there will be several studies being done even by DOT, because the 63rd Street corridor is under the state's jurisdiction. So they'll work with us, and we have to look at all aspects of it, the good and the bad, and then determine if it makes sense. Now, it is in our master plan.
Okay. I mean, I guess, you know, goals are great, but at the end of the day, a goal has to fit the reality of movement in a city that is not symmetrical all the time and not easy. So I just... my assumption is when you guys do your studies, are you going to say to us, if we do this, if we close, and I'm just using 63rd as an example, if we close a lane on 63rd, here's what the backups will be, and you have to decide whether you want that or not? Or will you guys recommend to us, even though we have a plan of having something citywide, this may be too much of a choke point to actually do in this way?
Our plan is to show you visually what 63rd Street would look like with a repurposed travel lane. So we would simulate that. We would simulate the impacts, the delays of 63rd with a repurposed lane, and that is the intent. 63rd Street specifically will be discussed at an upcoming neighborhoods committee meeting, and our goal is to show you visually what that would look like.
Visually is great, but I think the more important thing is what it means to people trying to get home for dinner. Because I don't actually go through there generally. I know Commissioner Steinberg does because she lives on the other side of that artery. But I know that it backs up tremendously now every evening probably. And then when we have, you know, bigger events, it's near weekends, it and 41st Street backs up all the way down. So I just keep wondering how... even if we get a visual of it and it fits a goal, whether it makes sense to do it given the, and I guess you'll let us know though. I mean, I guess what I really am asking is, will your, the next step of this, you'll show us not simply a rendition, but you'll show us the impact to wait times and things like that.
Correct. And that will be done collaboratively between FDOT, who own the road, and ourselves.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Well, you know, I want you to finish. How much more do you have of the presentation before we can dive into questions or comments?
We have probably another 20 minutes, I would say, but we could try to shorten that.
I don't know. I would love to see the whole presentation, but I don't want to take up too much time now if some of these questions or comments are going to be addressed in your presentation. What do you all think?
Let's want to let them go through 20 minutes, and then we'll and then you all can I'll give you free for all on these guys.
Okay.
Sorry to.
So one of the things that we were charged with is looking at international and national cities, and as directed by the Finance and Economic Resilience Committee, we have done that. For that, we engaged an international firm, Alta Planning and Design, and they really did an in-depth analysis as well as interviews of staff in those cities. And, you know, they came up with a very comprehensive memorandum that will be ready right after this presentation. Today we're going to give you just a couple slide synopsis of it, and essentially we're going to be looking at, you know, what lessons that we learned, you know, what we looked at, and then what lessons we learned. It's worth noting, though, that European cities are not always apples to apples when it comes to us. Just, you know, regardless of culture, a lot of their government and just taxing structure is a little bit different. But you know, one of the things that was a good takeaway is that none of these cities started out as bicycle cities. they essentially were, you know, by one reason or another, were sort of forced into it. So that's an important thing to note. Next slide. So the cities that we concentrated on were Amsterdam, Copenhagen, Stockholm, and then for the national city, we looked at Santa Monica. And then we concentrated our research on what progressive policy they had, some design innovations that they had, you know, what was their approach, how can we learn from their approach, and ultimately, what do they do in terms of education? One of the important things to note is that education, it's a very critical step in all of these cities. They essentially started educating from a schooling age on how, you know, how bicycle works, and then ultimately they reinforce that throughout life with events and campaigns. Next slide. So the next slide is rather charged, so I'm going to actually just shorten that significantly with just our lessons learned. And what you have here is just essentially a matrix of our lessons learned and general highlights that we want to take from there. All these cities, things that they share and that they have in common is that they have a strong advocacy and just a lot of political will behind their implementation of their master plan. So that's an important piece. And another important point is a lot of these cities, or most of these cities, started their projects as pilot projects. They started, you know, demonstrating and doing interim projects in order to get there. And then, you know, another general highlight is their projects are typically aligned with, you know, larger reconstruction of streets. So in terms of applicability to Miami Beach, one of the things that we learned that could be explored in the future is taking a look at limitation of parking at, you know, the more congested or central locations, and taking a look at maybe off-street parking as a result. And then, you know, developing, you know, a counter program, developing a bike counter program in order to be able to sort of do check-ins on how we're doing in those terms. There are other innovative practices that, of course, we will be ready and we can discuss in the question and answer. Next slide. The other item that we were charged with taking a look at in terms of at the Finance Committee was the cycling safety ordinance that the city of Cambridge implemented back in 2019 and then did an amendment in 2020. Next slide. So in terms of, you know, a little bit of the history on the of the city of Cambridge, they did their master plan in 2015, very similar to ours. Then in 2018, they had the sidewalk and streets plan. And there was a little bit of a disconnect between those plans. And the advocacy groups there thought that, you know, they saw the disconnect, and they also thought that the bicycle plan was not moving fast enough. So they passed an original ordinance to give sort of teeth and force the conversation in terms of having all the master plan projects be you know, be included into the streets and sidewalk plan. And seeing that that was perhaps not moving as quickly, they passed an amendment in 2020 that essentially assigned deadlines to each one of the projects in the corridors. So that was an interesting part that they went through in order to advance their program. Next slide. So the next slide provides you a little bit of history, and I'm just going to go over some amendment some specific items on the amendments. So in the 2019 ordinance, the city was not essentially required to implement the projects, and it gave the administration a little bit of an out when it came to the implementation based on, you know, constructability, feasibility, and things like that, which are very valuable things. But in the 2020 amendment, one of the things that they did was they set deadlines for each corridor, and based on those deadlines, if they could not meet the deadline in a permanent project, then they set that as a temporary project or a pilot project, which is, you know, gives you the benefit ahead of time. And then they assigned the final decision if the deadline could not meet to the city council. So that was, it was important. It was an important measure of accountability when it came to the implementation. Next slide. So just in summarizing some of the lessons learned and takeaways, goes back to strong advocacy when it came to the implementation, tying the bicycle master plan to, you know, to best practices in neighborhood design. That was important. And another important piece that they did, and, you know, try to move forward with short-term projects. That was also an important aspect that they did. And, you know, having that accountability be done, be part of that ordinance was very important. Next slide. So, you know, over the past year, we've been able to, you know, we've become familiar with using pilots and using temporary projects in order to move forward. You know, while pilots are, you know, are effective and they require close monitoring, so it's important, it's an important piece to check back into the pilots. With this, I'm going to reintroduce Tony Garcia, who's going to talk a little bit about pilot implementation. It's something that they do. They're one of the well-recognized firms in tactical urbanism and pilot implementation throughout the country.
Thanks, Josiel. You can go to the next slide. Mr. Mayor, you brought something up regarding 63rd, which I thought was really interesting, which was, you know, the renderings are nice and the drawings are nice, but how is it actually going to function? And one of the things that we go back to time and again is let's do, and you've already done this all over the beach at this point, you guys, your staff are experts at this, at doing these pilot projects, breaking down project delivery into smaller increments, so that you see what the outcome is going to be of a project before you spend millions of dollars and spend 5 or 10 years working on a design. And I think that's where you all should go in terms of implementation of these projects moving forward, especially with a project like 63rd, where it shouldn't be a surprise. It's going to lead to more congestion. That's going to happen. So it's a question of like going slow, taking small steps, seeing how the public accepts it, and then increasing the quality of the materials as you go on towards a more permanent design. Can you go to the next slide, please? And so when we talk about what pilot projects are and demonstration projects, we're talking about using low-impact materials, inexpensive materials, and you have examples of this now right outside City Hall with the Zikla, you know, bike lanes. Those are, comparatively speaking, it's not the same, it's not even close to the same as moving curbs and gutters. So you achieve a high level of safety and you start to create that network effect while not having to spend millions of dollars and also cutting down the amount of time and political energy that you spend defending a project before it's ever actually in the ground. And then you get to find out and build up that support from the community immediately rather than have to wait over time. And we see this all over the country. I can tell you, we work on very controversial projects, and we have people that come out at the beginning of the project who are very against it. And then after they are involved with the implementation, we still see people who are against the projects, but at least we're able to grow the people who see the value of those projects because it happens so fast. You build momentum in a really fast way, and that helps with the execution. Go to the next slide. And so we call this methodology is called tactical urbanism. You've already started doing this. This is something that you did in Rue Vendôme with the plaza there. That was a project that we did for you several years ago. You've done it on slow streets now. I consider Meridian to be tactical urbanism and Ocean Drive and Washington. These are all tactical projects. They're all quick build projects. And part of there's really four main qualifications and characteristics. They're inexpensive. They're implemented really fast. So Rue Vendôme was painted over the course of, you know, 3 or 4 days. It's not something that takes a whole lot of time. They involve the community. So you instead of having a meeting, a public meeting about a project, you invite people to come out and actually build the infrastructure. Even bike lanes, we'll go out and build a bike lane and have people come and help. It's a great way to channel people's civic energy rather than just have them come to a commission meeting and get angry with you guys or not. Maybe they support things, but and then finally, they're based off of master plans. And that's one of the great things about your master plan is that it's already set you up for success. You already have all the tactical projects there. They're laid out in the document. So you just have to start to get them off the piece of paper. This is an important note, and it points to one of the things that we'd love direction from you all today is there's no standard right now in Miami-Dade County. And I've been working on this with county staff for years, trying to get them to see the difference between something that's done in a month or 2 months versus something that takes 5 years. They shouldn't go through the same sort of analysis. But when we see the tactical test as the test, that is the analysis. It's a much better way of doing a traffic study to see how it functions in real life than to try to do some sort of study with an algorithm. So part of what we're asking today is to set up an agreement with the county to allow staff to do these projects without having to go through, you know, multi-year analysis. Go to the next slide. So I'm going to hand it off here to Josiel.
Thank you, Tony. And I'll go through the remaining slides quickly here. Even pilots require funding, as we all know. We requested funding last fiscal year for this fiscal year to do some pilots. That funding was not approved, but because of some savings in our departmental budget, we were able to move forward with pilots in 2020. We've requested enhancements to maintain those existing pilots that are out there today, and we are also requesting funding for new pilots for next fiscal year. But at this point, none of the pilots, the existing ones, or even, you know, the ones that are being requested, are funded. Next slide, please. So one of the things that we've learned from the other cities is, in terms of their approach, how to best move forward with bicycle pedestrian infrastructure projects, not just in the long term, but in the short term as well. And we have some ideas that we'd like to share with all of you. As I mentioned, they are not funded, but just food for thought, if you will. Next slide. We have potential pilot project in North Beach, in Middle Beach, and in South Beach. The North Beach is a very simple project. It's estimated to cost about $75,000, and it's essentially expanding the bulb out areas via paint and art to increase the pedestrian safety zone at intersections. Next slide, please. The Pine Tree LaGorse Drive protected bike lanes. This is another critical gap in our network. Pine Tree and LaGorse, as you all know, extend from 23rd Street on the south to 63rd Street on the north. So it's a significant piece of the network. One way to approach protected bike lanes on Pine Tree and LaGorse is to test the protected bike lanes. There are two lanes in each direction. For the most part, on Pine Tree, there are sections of Pine Tree that do not have a lot of vehicular volumes, which is one of the reasons that there is speeding on Pine Tree, and it's because cars feel comfortable going fast because there aren't a lot of cars on Pine Tree on some segments. So what we're proposing to do is to test that, and that's about $100,000. And next slide,
around
please.
The rotaries.
Excuse me?
How do you do that around the rotaries?
There are a couple different ways. Usually the bicycle becomes a vehicle at some point around the rotary. It needs to either mix in traffic or it can function as a pedestrian. I'll let Josiel.
Yeah, so in the case of Pine Tree, as you know, we're working on a traffic circle there. In that one, we're actually proposing a path outside so that the bicyclist goes outside of the traffic circle or the roundabout proposed there so that they have their own path.
I mean,
I
don't mean that one. I mean the all of them. There are little roundabouts throughout Pine Tree and LaGorse.
Oh, the football islands there.
Street very close to the crosswalk going north-south on each direction or south-north. How would that work if you sort of move? I mean, how would you do that?
So on that one, we would have to take a closer look at it, but this is one of the areas where it may be useful in order to even reduce cut-through traffic, because there's a lot of cut-through traffic that goes through there, that we may be able to take a look at, whether Pine Tree or LaGorse, to take a look at, you know, doing a road diet and having a single lane and maybe taking some of that area or that other lane to create either a two-way or a single-way bike lane. So that's one of the ideas. On the other hand, with that, one of the things is there is some leftover space in that area with the gutter and things along those lines. We can look into, you know, on a longer term at reconstructing that area in order to create the space for bike lanes.
Okay. Hold on, Commissioner Steinberg.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Can you explain that a little bit more?
I don't think she understands how the roundabout goes to the edge of the north, the walkways going north-south. I walk my dog every morning and night down that area. And when the cars come around, they basically corner the side of the walkway.
Yeah, like how do you make it protected for the bicyclist? Like how do you achieve that end objective?
So as I mentioned, Commissioner, one of the things, and we have to look at that in more detail. This is why this is sort of a test.
Right, we're just conceptually talking.
Yeah, but on a conceptual level, you have two options that you can take a look at. You can take a look at, or actually three options. You can look at take a look at narrowing lanes, existing lanes, And where you have the football islands, you can take a look at the available space that you have, and there you have some available space, even though it's a little bit narrower than further down in the corridor, and seeing if that available space is sufficient for protection. But more importantly, in that area, one of the things anybody who travels that area is that area sort of thrives on cut-through traffic, right? So there is, if you look at the actual volumes in that area, you have about 4,000 vehicles a day. The AADT is 4,000 vehicles in Pine Tree and about 3,000 in some in La Course. If, when you look at that, those are numbers that do not necessarily qualify for two lanes in each direction, particularly in a single direction. So perhaps taking a look at a road diet in that direction and inserting some of that, that would help reduce some of that cut-through traffic, as well as, you know, make more effective the traffic calming that already exists there. That would also gain us a space to have the additional bike lanes and you know, make the street more calm and more livable in general. In the long term, if that was a good test, in the long term, you know, one can seek to put, you know, sidewalks on both sides. Right now, you only have sidewalk on one side of the street.
Commissioner, there's also a drawing in the attachment, which is the Bicycle Pedestrian Master Plan Guided Tour, has a drawing of what that could potentially look like, that configuration on Pine Tree. Can you pull up the present? Thank you. The South Beach Promenade, it was just discussed last Friday at the Finance Committee meeting. The idea is to connect through a pedestrian promenade the Lincoln Road Mall, Española Way, and the Ocean Drive District. And we're working with Bernard Siskovich and his Art Deco Cultural District vision, as well as with the Lincoln Road consultants, to envision that connection. We're currently doing a planning level study, but as part of that planning study, we want to identify opportunities for short-term improvements. And there, we've estimated that at about $150,000. So that's another potential idea for next fiscal year.
Mayor,
next slide.
May I be recognized?
Mr. Samuel.
Thank you, Jose. I just want to make a couple comments. I believe that this is a critical project, the South Beach Promenade. Commissioner Arriola has shown great leadership on this one. As you properly indicated, we have planning work undergoing. And also at finance, we're going to be looking at some budget level estimates. I think we need to make this project a priority. We have amazing assets in South Beach, Ocean Drive, Lincoln Road, Espanola Way, but they're not connected. And, you know, you'd happenstance, for those who aren't familiar with South Beach, to trip into one and not know the other ones around the way. So I think this has very high upside. And importantly, maybe a little different than some of the discussions that we're having around Pine Tree, La Gorse, and 63rd, I think we can do this in a way that is not necessarily going to inhibit resident quality of life. This is areas where I think we can be judicious in the change. So for me, it's always an equation of sort of the upside and the cost and pain, if you will, the pain gain. And this one has tremendous gain, and there's not as much pain. So I just want to go on the record. I think it's a great project, and I hope we will do this right, and do this quickly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner. Keep going.
Next slide. So I'd like to share with you some of the challenges and opportunities. Next slide. Limited right-of-way and competing interests. We're all familiar with that. I'll point to a successful project that we implemented recently. It's the Meridian Avenue protected bike lanes. If you all recall, there used to be more travel lanes on Meridian Avenue between Dade Boulevard and 17th Street. And as a result of the project that we implemented, we eliminated a lane, and we also eliminated some on-street parking there. So there are definitely some trade-offs that are part of this conversation, because for most of the bicycle pedestrian projects that we have in our master plan to come to fruition, they will require some trade-off in one way or another. So it's an important conversation to have. Next slide. The status of our neighborhood improvement projects and resilience program. When we adopted our master plan back in 2016, 5 years ago, the approach then was to sequence our projects with the larger neighborhood improvement projects. So if you look at the city's five-year capital plan, you will find bicycle pedestrian projects there. But they are not fully funded. They're only partially funded because they depend on the larger resilience project to be implemented.
Are you saying we should separate them from the resiliency program and give them their own funding source so that we don't have to, they don't have to wait?
There's some improvements that need to be tied to the larger permanent project, but if there are opportunities to move forward with something in the interim, with an interim type or short-term type of project, that is currently not part of our master plan. That wasn't part of the approach back then. The approach back then was just the permanent projects.
So are you guys recommending that we, you'll let us know if some of them ought to be separated? I know there's going to be a request for some amount of recurring money to allow for implementing of these projects, but you want them as a separate?
Mr. Mayor, if you follow the logic of the Cambridge Ordinance and what was done at the City of Cambridge, that's basically the concept, is to decouple some of these projects from the long-term projects, because we've all seen what those projects are turning into, and we know that timing-wise, if we wait for those projects, some of these bicycle and pedestrian projects will take a very long time. So that's the conversation that we're having internally, and certainly it's a lesson learned from what happened in Cambridge.
So I'm assuming, like, on some of them, you'll say this one makes sense to decouple, others we wouldn't do it because there may be just too much massive work being done where it
exactly.
didn't make sense.
Correct.
Anybody, any of you guys want, I think that's a critical point you need direction on, right?
Yes.
Anybody care? Anybody object to that? I don't think Commissioner, I'm not speaking for him, but I suspect if he is in favor of that. Any of my colleagues, can we sort of give them a sense of?
Yeah, I think where it makes sense, we should absolutely look to identify that. You know, where it's feasible and where it makes sense, we should look to do that.
Okay.
If that's the objective, I mean, if that's
yeah,
the
I don't know why we would artificially hold back a project that we want to. I mean, a lot of these we're trying to learn a little bit about what impact they would have, and it's hard because sometimes they're not as pretty as they would be in the final form or aesthetically desirable, or people might not like that. But they do give us a sense of what it has, what real life impact it has on. I haven't been crazy about Washington Avenue because every time I go down it, I feel like every time somebody's parking, it stops everybody. Forever. But on the other hand, I'm always prepared to let administration try because I think it's important. So do anybody object to that? We're not voting, but just so the commission that Alina knows, do we feel like a decoupling on the ones that they feel are, I see Samuelin raising, nodding yes, and Steinberg seems to be.
I just think that would be something that would be brought to the Finance Committee, right? They would present which would be decoupled and the reasons set forth, and I think that's a conversation that should give staff the flexibility to bring forward to us.
Okay. All right, keep going.
Sure. Just on that note, in Cambridge, they've got the bicycle pedestrian plan, and then they've got the comprehensive neighborhood improvement plan that actually has years tied to projects. So that helped them make those decisions in terms of what projects should move forward now versus which ones it may not make sense to move forward with because there is a larger neighborhood improvement project right around the corner. So we're not there yet.
It's very, very conceptual and preliminary, so you just need to have the flexibility to let us know if you want to pursue that. Are we okay with that? Listen, the other thing, too, is with Jacobs and changing the order of the project resiliencies in the city, we don't even know what the updated queue looks like right now, so it would be a good exercise to even understand what the final permanent projects are going to look like in the city and what you would like to bifurcate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think
we'll
that would
need
be interesting to see.
Okay.
Yep. All right, so we will definitely look at all our projects and see which ones it makes sense to decouple and bring that to you at a future finance meeting. Next slide, please. Next. Another challenge, and it's just the reality of things. We don't own our streets. We have many streets that are either under the jurisdiction of the Florida Department of Transportation or Miami-Dade County, where any improvement, even very sensible bicycle pedestrian improvements, require their buy-in, their endorsement, require a lot of traffic studies and permitting process. So, I'm sorry. One slide back, PJ. The jurisdiction. Okay, there it is, the jurisdiction. So this is an example of the Meridian Avenue project that I mentioned, which took all in all from when we started the planning to when we finished construction, 2.5 years. Of that time, 540 days were spent on permitting. There are two stages of permitting, at the design or the conceptual stage, if you will, where we have to do all the traffic studies to prove the concept, and then later on in the design to be permitted for construction. Next slide, please. And then the last challenge that we wanted to share with you, in essence, is about our department. We are currently managing over 46 Priority 1 projects, master plan projects, totaling over $50 million. Prior to COVID, the department had 11 full-time positions. Of those, 3.5 positions, 3.5 to be exact, were assigned to implementing master plan projects. As a result of the pandemic, two positions were eliminated, so we're down to a total of 9 in the department and 1.8 FTEs responsible for the development of those 40-plus bicycle pedestrian projects. So very few staff juggling a lot of projects. We submitted a budget enhancement for fiscal year 22, and you will be seeing that as part of the budget retreat, the upcoming retreat. The request is to recover those two FTEs that were lost during the pandemic. And the last slide, that we just want to pause here and talk through some of these issues the next 45 minutes. The topics for discussion, the approach to funding and implementing projects, and we just received some direction on that to move forward with some short-term projects where they make sense and bring those to you. The second point, whether or not to pursue an ordinance like the Cambridge, Massachusetts ordinance. And really what that ordinance did was it provided accountability. It not only said there's a master plan and it has a robust project bank of over 100 projects, but it said the city will build these projects in these time frames. So it's a very structured ordinance. As I mentioned previously, it's going to be a bit challenging to mimic that ordinance because we don't have that master plan. In other words, what we would need is the Jacobs plan to have years tied to those neighborhood improvement projects. That would help us plan the above ground bicycle pedestrian improvements a bit better.
So what are you asking us to ask you?
Well, I think there are aspects of that ordinance that we can certainly take from, and it would be good to have an ordinance that supports master plan project implementation. We don't have that currently. That's one of the things the Cambridge ordinance does. As I mentioned, it goes beyond that. I think we would need to take a close look at that ordinance with our CIP department, Public Works department, with legal as well, and see what would be appropriate to extract and apply to Miami Beach. And
want to know what your recommendation is. Are you asking, do you all want to put, what do you want to do? Do you want to put together a Cambridge Streets and Sidewalks plan for Miami Beach? Is that what you want? In other words, you got to tell us what you want so we can say yes.
Mr. Mayor, it's premature to discuss that. I think we need to get through the budget, and we need to get through the budget workshop. I think the decoupling of the projects is a major moment because it's different than what the policy direction has been. So I think there has to be an evaluation of that, and there has to be probably a reprioritizing of the current funding schedule. There are pilots that are discussed here that are currently not funded, and there are enhancements that are asked for here that will not be recommended for funding. So the budget workshop and the budget retreat, the budget visioning session that we're going to have this week is going to be very telling, and it's going to you know, give you a really good perspective of where we stand today. I think there's a lot that's in here that's very good, and it's the right way to go about doing all of this. I think, unfortunately, we're in this moment of time. So I think there are pieces of this that we're committed to and that we can do and start to do immediately. But I think in terms of tying an ordinance and tying our hands with specific time frames, it's a bit premature, and it's certainly a goal, and it's certainly something that we can aspire to be. But at this point, I think it's premature today. But I think within the next year, we should be able to be on that path, and we should be able to revisit our projects, revisit our master plan, and see what our recovery looks like.
Mayor, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Thank you. Madam Manager, do we know, since you brought up the budget, do we know what the range of impact would be in terms of this decoupling question? Like, if we decouple, are we talking about additional cost, or are we talking about the spread of cost over a different period of time?
I don't know specifically the answer to that, but I believe that it would be over a period of time, and I believe that there's a large percentage of these projects that are probably funded already. Do you know, Jose?
In some cases, Commissioner, it may be additional cost, because if we do a short-term improvement, once the long-term improvement comes in, obviously that short-term improvement will need to be ripped up. So, but we could structure it in a way where it makes sense. If there's a neighborhood improvement project that's 10 years down the line, and there's a safety issue that should be addressed, there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to move forward. And we can set certain thresholds in terms of, if the neighborhood improvement is more than X years away, we'll move forward with a short term. Maybe also a cost consideration should be there. And I think those are good conversations for the Finance Committee. So we need to drill down a little more and bring you that information.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, Madam Manager, as you said, let's get through this budget workshop, because that's where we've got to focus. And then as we start looking at these projects, I think that we could get some estimates on what would be the costs associated with each one if we decouple, because there will be some that we will want to decouple if it's a public safety issue and the bigger project is much further down the road. But I would think that you could give us project by project the ones that you're going to recommend that we decouple, and what would be the economic impact, because there will be an increase in cost, because we, on some projects, we would have to redo the work, and we wouldn't want to do that where we were going to do the bigger project a year later. But as Jose said, if we're going to do it 10 years down the road, we'd want to go ahead and address the public safety issues. So thank you.
Yeah.
We'd be happy to do that. And one of the struggles that I had, even in preparation for this workshop, is, you know, the evaluation and the slides that relate to a pilot project, to the pilot projects, because while the pilot projects are, again, vision, they're not even in our master plan. Even some of the projects that we've currently implemented are not in our master plan. So I have a concern about creating an expectation that's unrealistic, especially given our current budget year.
Yeah, if I may?
Sure.
Yeah, well, that's why I said earlier, I want to let the city manager's office let us know what they feel we should look at, and if it's feasible. You know, feasibility is a big part of this discussion, and we want to be realistic in our expectations. So, yeah, thank you, Madam Manager, for that. So just a couple quick things. Is the presentation finished, or do you have anything else?
We're done.
Okay,
this is the last
one. I just want to make sure it's the right time. Look, there's a lot of really good things in here, as everybody has said. I love the idea of the connection on 17th Street, on the 23rd, 24th. I think those are like game changers, right? I think that's something that we should really look and strive towards. Obviously, 63rd Street is going to be more complicated. We already have a big issue with 63rd Street today, as it stands today. And I don't know how we're going to, I don't know if that's going to be an enhancement to quality of life in the area, or just make it so much more exasperated that I don't know if the benefit is going to be there overall. I don't know the answer to that right now, but I can tell you today, it's not a tenable situation. I think you get emails from me probably weekly on this particular area, because you're also dealing with a drawbridge and the openings of the drawbridge. And, you know, years ago, there used to be an overpass, a flyover over the 63rd Street Bridge. And it was actually controversial when that came down. And so this was part of how FDOT went to reconfigure the streets at the time. And so I also want to caution us, when we do these studies and collect the data, that we're doing it at opportune times, not in the summer, not, you know, during off-peak times. We really want to get the real data when it comes to these things so we can make the most informed decision. But what are we also doing to reach out to the community about these different connection points?
Specific to 63rd Street, Commissioner, the project is very preliminary. It's just a concept. It's not. I wouldn't call it a project at this time. And it does need to be vetted by the Neighborhoods Committee and then City Commission. So at this point, we have a traffic study from FDOT. But that traffic study, I didn't see any sort of visualization or simulation as part of that, which I think is going to be critical. Particularly when we reach out to the community. I think the community is going to want to know not just what the project is going to look like, but how will it impact their daily commute. And that needs to be part of that simulation exercise, which we've done for some other projects that you may have seen. So certainly 63rd Street concept merits that. And so we're not there yet. I think in a few months we'll be going before Neighborhoods Committee, FDOT will. And I think that's the opportunity to discuss some of these concerns. My understanding is that FDOT collected the data prior to the pandemic. They completed the study, the report, in 2020, but the data was based on 2019 data. But I think we need to take a
closer
look at that.
Yeah, and remember in 2019, we didn't have the same amount of bridge openings and closings. Mm-hmm. That was an interesting paradigm shift during the pandemic of more things entering on the water. So the vessels and the number of times that the bridge opens and closes has also changed. So I think all of that needs to be you almost have to look at it through a new lens today, because pre-pandemic was one story, post-pandemic is going to be another with the waterways. But I love the idea of connectivity. Of course, we want protected bike lanes. I mean, I thank Commissioner Arriola for putting this workshop together. I think it was his item. So I'm very supportive. Obviously, everything right now south of 63rd Street, I think, is fantastic. I think we need to rework 63rd for the obvious reasons that were stated. 13th Street, 17th Street, 23rd Street. What about 41st Street? What can be done there?
I'm sorry, Commissioner, which street? 41st Street. The idea is to have bicycle facilities on 40th and 42nd. It's going to be very challenging to accommodate bike lanes on 41st Street. Given there's also the desire from the City Commission to expand pedestrian areas for sidewalk cafes and other uses. So it's going to be very challenging.
So are we missing an opportunity for protected bike lanes because we're expanding the sidewalks too far out?
I believe so. I believe that's one of the cases where it was a trade-off between the expanded sidewalk areas or bike lane. If that's the case. Yeah, that was one of those trade-offs where the city really looked at its modal hierarchy of pedestrians first, and based on that, made the decision to expand the pedestrian realm rather than move forward with the bike lanes. But we feel that there's, you know, not a great alternative, but an adequate parallel corridor on 40th and on 42nd to try to at least get some bicycle infrastructure there. And, you know, at some point, the bicyclists will have to come back to 41st to be able to go over the creek.
Yeah.
Because 40th and 42nd do not go, they don't have bridges that go over the creek.
Right. Oh, and then you also have the 75th Street, right, connection potential, which I think is a great idea as well at the north end of the city. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I love the vision of where we're going with this. Obviously, we need to drill down. This is a workshop. We're just here to hear it. This is the first time we're digesting a lot of this and trying to wrap our arms around a lot of this information. I think that is a huge policy shift, too, about the potential of decoupling some of these projects and not tying them to something that may not be slated for 10 years down the road, but we could do something in the short term, provided our budget cycle allows for it and provided it's feasible all around. So, just my initial comments. I look forward to having more discussion and robust dialogue about this and really trying to do what we can to help move our city forward in the most, you know, in a way that, that truly is a benefit to all the surrounding communities and the residents, right?
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Minor, I see your hand is up.
Thank you, Mayor. Good discussion. I just wanted to raise an issue about pedestrian safety. This is called the bicycle and pedestrian safety. How is that being addressed? Obviously, bicycle safety and pedestrian safety. We've had a lot of discussions in neighborhoods committee about specifically the beach walk and the safety. And it's really, it's not only the bicycles interacting with the bicycles interacting with pedestrians, but there's also safety at night and whether there's appropriate signage, whether there's potentially we could add some call boxes so people can pull a lever to call for emergency help if necessary. Obviously having enforcement personnel there as well, police, park rangers. I know we also got an email during this meeting actually from a Flamingo Park resident raising the issues about pedestrian safety. So I think it all goes together obviously, but I haven't heard much today about that. So I was just wondering if there's something specifically we're working on to address all those issues from a safety standpoint.
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner. We debated quite a bit on the beach walk and whether to include that as part of this workshop or not. And at the end of the day, we felt that's going to require at least a 30-minute discussion just on that. And it is a discussion that, as you know, is ongoing at Neighborhoods Committee. So what we'd like to do is, I believe it was deferred to next month at Neighborhoods, we want to bring some concepts before the committee and, you know, deliberate that. That's going to require at least, I would say, a 30-minute discussion just on that. There are portions of the beach walk that are sufficiently wide to segregate the modes, but they're not long enough. 70% of the entire beach walk from the South Point to the northernmost point, 70% of it is only 15 feet or less in width. That makes it extremely challenging to try to segregate the modes. Can it be done? Can we stripe a line? Sure. How many people will actually, how many pedestrians, and I believe we have about 12,000 pedestrians on the beach walk and more than 20,000 bicyclists.
What's that data, 12,000 or what?
That's per month.
Per month, okay.
Per month. So that is a huge number of people using that beach walk. And in a 15-foot wide path, to segregate it, to give 8 feet to bicyclists, for example, and 6 or 7 feet to the pedestrian, and there's got to be at least a foot separation there somehow. It could be done, but we just feel that it will not be effective, and it will be extremely impossible to enforce. So, and that's 70%. That's the case for 70% of that beach walk width. So it's definitely a challenge, but we have some other ideas that we'd like to discuss next month at Neighborhoods.
Okay, thank you. I look forward to the discussion. I've always thought a good idea would be, and I've raised this in neighborhoods, would be to have, even if it's not the, even if it's not 10 feet wide, just some kind of symbol to indicate there's a bicycle path. I think most people would adhere to it, and it would add to safety. So perhaps we can discuss that as well. But yeah, I don't want to, and it sounds good that we'll have this separate discussion on the beach walk, but I think it also behooves us to have the pedestrian safety as a whole discussion. Maybe that's a separate item that we bring. But I just wanted to flag that because I think that's certainly on people's minds as well. I did have some questions and concerns about the 63rd Street sort of proposal, but I think the mayor and Commissioner Steinberg and perhaps others properly addressed that and you answered that. So I won't belabor that. Thank you.
Okay, any other commissioners want to say something?
Mayor.
Mr. Samuels.
Thank you. I want to first start with just recognizing the administration and the Transportation Department for some pilots that I truly think have been successful. The feedback I've heard overall has been quite positive. Flamingo Park neighborhood, who worked so closely with us on the slow streets and really made some headway. I think we've slowed traffic down. I think we've had progress. So that's a pilot. I want to give some kudos. I know it's not front and center today, but I think what we've done on Ocean Drive is a good thing. I think putting pedestrians first, and we don't hear residents complaining about the traffic on Ocean Drive. Maybe a little different than the situation on Washington, because they're not driving on Ocean Drive, and they're now able to access a street that they really weren't having as access to. Now pedestrians, cyclists, residents can use Ocean Drive, so kudos to your team for what you've done there. The beach walk is, with the challenge you mentioned, is a big success, and I don't want to lose the opportunity that we, I believe, as a body, have a grander vision from the beach to the bay, and that includes the pedestrian bridge over Fifth and accelerating the bay walk. We'll be talking about that on land use on Wednesday, so kudos on the beach walk, but really the entire vision is you can make your way around the whole island from the beach to the bay as you get over to Fifth Street. Final thought. I appreciate the goals for Mode Share. I would just sort of underline the importance of being data-driven. And so if we're going to say that's the goal, then the logical questions are, how are we doing on that goal? And I think when we talk about safety, I would like to elevate the importance of data, including, you know, crash data. Where are we having problems? Are we having lots of issues? What does that look like? So I appreciate the aspiration of the plan. I support the plan. And then data to support progress would be helpful. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. I've been unusually quiet, but I've been enjoying the presentation and the comments from my colleagues today. Just a few things. Obviously, we all feel the same way. Pedestrian safety, bicyclist safety is paramount. That's why we are doing these studies and taking out this time today on this very important issue. Thank you for the tours that you provided. I enjoyed being able to go out and personally see some of the areas that we're talking about today. The South Beach Promenade idea is particularly exciting for me. I think that would be a wonderful connection, connecting all of these key tourism and resident-friendly streets that we all like to go to that have so much restaurant and activity going on there. I do think it's important that we look at each project as part of the budget process so we can know what they cost. We can love all of them, but we got to make sure that we can afford to do them. So I think that was important. With Washington Avenue, I know a number of people love the protected bike lanes. We've temporarily kind of stopped that. We haven't. She has, the new manager, as a safety measure, which we all agree with. But I think we're going to have to look at Washington Avenue. I've mentioned this at a couple of commission meetings because it's also clustered and traffic-filled. You know, we get a lot of complaints on the weekends from people that the mobility has been too restricted. I also listened to the comments from Commissioner Steinberg and others about 63rd Street. I think I live the closest to there, so I understand the traffic concerns. That's a very congested and somewhat dangerous intersection to cross. And it used to be there really wasn't a lot for us to do. But now that there's a Starbucks, there's the beach walk, there's a lot of restaurants going north from 63rd, you see a lot more pedestrian and bicyclist activity. We need to make sure whatever we do doesn't congest the roads any further there as well. And finally, I think the beach walk, as was mentioned, is an important component. I don't think we can talk about bicycle and pedestrian safety without that piece of the puzzle missing. And, you know, it's very exciting. I remember, and I've said this many times, but when I first got elected in 2006, several mayors ago, we were talking about the beach walk and the idea of piecing it together little by little, and they said it would never be done. And here we are 15 years later, and we're about to open up the beach walk finally and see that vision through that so many have worked on. And the bay walk will be next, and I look forward to being a part of that. So I look forward to this. I think this was a good discussion starter, not the discussion ender, but in putting all of these these issues on our plates and on our minds as we move forward. So we'll hear them on neighborhoods, we'll hear them at commission, we'll hear them at budget workshop. And for those of you that are watching, and there are many of you passionate bicyclists and others, that this is an important issue, to continue to stay in touch with us.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, since Ocean Drive and Washington were both raised, I think it's important that I put on the record, you know, both decisions to pedestrianize and to create the bicycle were part of the vision, and they were, you know, we had a year where I think the department has done an incredible job of really implementing the vision and the policy of the board. I think we've learned through those implementations, and we continue to learn. And I made the decision that I made relative to Washington Avenue and actually to the continuation of the pedestrianization of Ocean Drive, really in preparation for what continues to be a high volume of visitors to our community and weekends that are very crowded in our city. I do want to be very clear that those are two areas that I want to discuss in June, and I want to get further policy direction. They're tied not only to public safety concerns and issues that both our police and fire chief are raising to me relative to, again, congestion on Washington Avenue and some of the implications that we're seeing with the crowds on Ocean Drive. And so I want to be very clear that I do want to and I need to put a discussion item in June, hopefully, where we can have a good conversation about Ocean Drive and the current pedestrianization of Ocean Drive and what the future might look like in a short-term basis. And as it relates to Washington Avenue, we do have some concerns relative to traffic flow.
Yeah, and I you know, we've talked about it, but I'm looking to do a morning meeting on just pedestrianization and policing those two areas for us sometime, perhaps even before our June meeting, just to give the administration opportunity to give us their recommendations so we can help them form their direction. We have a couple people who want to speak.
Mayor, if you don't mind, I'd just like to add a comment relative to the manager. Thank you for your comment, Madam Mayor, manager, and I don't want to elevate you. Sorry, Mayor. I appreciate the decision that you made as someone living in Flamingo Park. You're absolutely right. We have a traffic control problem on Washington. It was a great experiment during the pandemic when there was very little traffic. But as someone who lives in Flamingo Park, what is happening is people are growing frustrated with Washington, and so they are moving into the neighborhood as a throughway, and so that's an issue that we need to address, because I've noticed more and more people using the Flamingo Park neighborhood as a way to move more quickly because they just can't move on Washington. So thank you for addressing this over the couple of weeks that we were expecting a lot more guests. I appreciate that.
Okay, so I'll tell you what, we've got people want to speak, but people are going to get a chance at both the neighborhood meeting and then the commission meeting. We're not taking action, but since they want to speak, and
your mic's not on.
Nope, my mic's not on. Let's go ahead, PJ. Let's let the public in. Let's give 1 minute of comment to everyone who wants to talk. And then after that, we'll adjourn the meeting. I don't think there's anything else. So let's go ahead and, PJ, can you do that? And I don't know how we, Raphael, are you able to control that?
I think so. So let's give it a try, PJ. Charlie Fisher is our first caller. Mr. Fisher, you have 1 minute.
1 minute, okay. So first, I'll talk real fast. I just want to acknowledge that the amount of safety improvements over the last 1 to 2 years has been accelerating more than the past couple of decades. So I just want to stop and acknowledge and thank everyone involved with city government that we are moving faster than we traditionally have, and I appreciate that. So thank you. I want to touch on the mayor's initial question about the negative impacts of congestion when it comes to potentially removing the traffic from car lane to a bike lane. And I use that corridor regularly on 63rd Street. I know we're talking about as a hypothetical. I live in Southeast, my parents live in Northeast. I am regularly stuck in that god-awful traffic heading north. But I want us to think about, I think we need to change the way we're thinking about this a little bit. The goal of all of us who are advocating for better bike infrastructure is to remove car congestion, to make more trips on bikes and trolleys. So Regularly, I'll think to go visit my parents on a bike, but I don't. I won't. I get in my car and drive because the trip back, especially at nighttime, I think is going to be too dangerous on the roads. So our infrastructure now has moved me from my preferred trip on a bike.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. I apologize, but your time is up. Our next caller is Mr. Wayne Roberts. Mr. Roberts, you have 1 minute.
Thank you very much. I just want to talk for the silent majority, I think the silent majority, and that is that, you know, somebody made a comment that there are 12,000 pedestrians and 20,000 bikes on the ocean walk. And I could tell you south of Fifth, especially, it's more like 60-1 pedestrian. I don't know where those statistics are coming from, but it sounds scary that somebody presented that. So that would be my first question, where that number came from. But, you know, I believe in biking, but it shouldn't take over everybody else. Everybody else in a car, everybody on a walkway. It shouldn't be primary one. Safety is important for that, you know, especially the bridges. But thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Our next caller is Mitch Novick.
Hey, Ralph, how about an extra 30 seconds?
Deal, go ahead.
Mitch Novick, I'm a member of the bicycling community. It is my primary mode of transportation. Whether you're into slow streets, safe streets, smart streets, or closed streets, my neighborhood has become a mobility and transportation nightmare. Regarding the South Beach Promenade, the closure or the proposed closure of Collins Avenue to Washington Avenue is going to disrupt the traditional urban street grid. And it's mind-boggling the blunders that this administration, I'm talking prior to Ms. Hudak, has made. Ocean Drive needs to be reopened. The buses need to be returned to Washington. And Washington needs to be reconfigured to the way it was. Regarding the Slow Streets program, that is where I ride my bike. There was never an issue in my 30-plus years living here of a vehicle even coming close to me here. It's the natural urban street grid. And you guys are just wasting our money. And I hope with the new leader on top that things will revert to normal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Novick. Our next caller is Alicia Casanova.
This is Alicia Casanova representing the Mid Beach Neighborhood Association. Thank you for doing this very important workshop. We're excited about all these pilot programs. Specifically, our big concern right now, even though we are all very excited with the opening of the beach walk that, you know, we advocated for, is seeing what's happening with the pedestrians and bicycles. We've had incidents that we have documented of accidents, bicycles running into people. We need to find a solution. Thank you, Commissioner Miner, for bringing it up. I think it's a discussion, obviously not for today, but it needs to be had. We need to come up with a creative solution to this very serious safety issue with the combination of mixed use. Also, to put on record that we are strongly advocating for separated bicycle lanes, hopefully painted green. We're advocating with the FDOT as we work on the Collins Avenue corridor project to make those separated safe bicycle lanes and make sure that they're all painted green. So this will be our mission from now on. We are very
excited. Thank you, Ms. Casanova. Your time is up. I apologize. Our next caller is Dave Greaser.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for holding this meeting. I think it's important to note, as the Transportation Department mentioned today, that we do have the highest percentage of non-car transport in the state of Florida, and that helps relieve our car congestion. The congestion on the streets isn't bike congestion or people congestion, it's personal car congestion. So to the extent that we can continue to move our modal process in the direction of pedestrians, public transportation, and bicyclists, we will continue to have less congestion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. And Mayor, we have one individual in the public who wanted to speak.
Thank you, and hello. It's nice to be back here in person and to see everyone's faces. I did prepare words for today. I dictated this morning when I was running through Ocean Drive, through the slow streets and elsewhere in our city, but they were 10 minutes long. Clearly, Raphael would not allow that. So I'm just going to say a couple things. One, it's important that we do pilots. We did a pilot on Washington, which is temporarily suspended, but it did prove something. If you build safe, protected bicycle facilities for people, they will come. The data that has been collected by the Transportation Department showed that there's over a 300% increase in the number of people that were riding bicycles. So I think it's important not to lose sight of that and to proceed, of course. Another thing I heard today were connections. So I can't stress enough, connections, connections, connections. We have the Beach Walk, which is the spine now, from the tip at Government Cut all the way up to North Beach Oceanside Park. Yeah. Can I continue, please?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Not 10 minutes.
Thank you. I don't even know what I'm going to say anymore. So, but as Commissioner Steinberg said, there are great opportunities that we have. And today we don't have a single bicycle lane that actually connects to the Beach Walk. We have South Point Drive, 5th Street, 71st Street, 16th Street. They all end blocks from the Beach Walk. If we don't have safe connectivity, we're not going to have more people who are choosing to travel this way. And what I will say is that a lot of cities use this this moniker, like 8 to 80 cities, where they design these bicycle lanes and the sidewalks and the mobility for people of all ages and abilities. Again, 8 to 80 years old. My goal and a lot of my advocacy is so that my children, my two young daughters who are both 5 and under, so that one day when they're at Miami Beach Senior High School, they have an opportunity to ride safely, but most importantly, to ride independently to school, and others, of course, their age. So I thank everyone, of course, for this workshop today, for taking out the time of everyone's busy schedule. I personally took the day off myself so that I could be here. And I think it's important that we don't pause what we're doing. They've shown that we've made significant progress and that we continue project by project. We will build a complete network that will allow everyone, again, to travel safely in our city. It's not an us versus them. It's everyone in this together. Thank you.
Thank you. I didn't catch your name.
Matthew Goltanoff.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Matthew. Okay. Thanks for the attendance here today, commissioners. Thanks, Commissioner Arriola. And meeting is adjourned.